You're listening to episode 41 of the FitsPro podcast, and welcome back, you guys. Today's episode is from a Q&A that I did on Instagram. I asked you guys or my Instagram family to submit questions around programming and training. Now, episode 42 is going to be all about travel and traveling the world and logistics and all of that, but today we are diving into all questions around training, health, fitness, and programming. I think you guys are going to really like this one, and obviously, if you did submit a question, I am answering all of them. So, without further ado, let's dive in. The FitsPro podcast is your no BS approach to seeking out truth in the world that is online health and fitness. You'll see through the lens of the trainer, the trainee, and the entrepreneur. I'm your host, Annie Miller, certified strength and conditioning specialist, entrepreneur, lover of sleep, lattes, and dinosaurs. AKA not your average FitsPro, and my aim is to help you grow your mind, body, and business through knowledge and authenticity so that you too can become a FitsPro. All right, fam, we are just going to start in with the questions. I believe we have 8 or 9. I did clump some of them together because they were similar. If it was like, you know, what are great resources for programming or something along those lines, then I just lumped them into one. This is likely going to be a longer podcast, so I hope that you are sitting in traffic or doing your laundry or that you have some real time to listen to these answers, but I'm very excited to dive into this one, so let's do it. First question, what would you describe as quote-unquote science-based programming? A lot of trainers prompt that now. I received this question when I was at Prehab 101 with Dr. Jacob Harden, and I actually shared this question with him because I thought it was a phenomenal question. It is so true that science-based programming or evidence-based programming has become a buzzword of sorts with trainers that are, you know, some trainers are using science-based programming, some are not, but they know that, you know, people want that, and so they claim it. It's an easy claim, but what does it really mean? So, in short, to claim something is science-based or evidence-based, there needs to have been scientific studies performed proving the tactic or method to be true or false. Ideally, there are several studies that back that claim. I mean, it's 2019, and just the other day I was reading an article in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research, which I have access to through my NSCA membership, about leg and hip muscle activity during the back squat, Romanian deadlift, and hip thrust, and it found that the squats had significantly higher levels of quad activity because of the knee flexion and extension involved, and the hip thrust had higher levels of glute max activity. The Romanian deadlift had the highest hamstring activity. We know this, right? Those are claims we can say are science-based or evidence-based training methods. There have been tons of studies that show those things to be true, right? So you're pairing hip thrusts and RDLs because you're targeting the hamstrings and the glutes, the posterior chain. That would be evidence-based training. There are also methods I have to mention that may not have been tested and published in a scientific journal, but they do work. And that's that. For instance, the heart rate or energy systems development used by Joel Jamieson. This is the type of conditioning that I use with my clients and Built by Annie programming. There are 6 different types of conditioning, all based on targeting and increasing your body's energy system thresholds in either alactic, anaerobic, or aerobic. And these methods have been effectively used and tested on athletes for years. There is data to show for that. Whether it has actually been proven in a scientific journal or not, I am not personally positive, but we can see heart rate variability improving, resting heart rates decreasing in a good way, thresholds increasing for that alactic, anaerobic, and aerobic, etc. But I can't say for sure, like I said, if those are specified studies to support Joel Jamieson's methods, but I would, however, claim them as science or evidence-based. So that's just me. You can get his book, Ultimate MMA Conditioning, that breaks all of that down for you, plus provides weekly progressions for training as well with all 6 of those types of heart rate training or energy systems development. Look for literature to back the claim, right? And ideally, there is actual controlled scientific data and studies on the subject. This is a huge reason that I get heated about claims made in regards to foam rolling. There just isn't enough data to back the claims that are made about foam rolling, you guys, that it reduces muscle soreness and increases mobility and increases range of motion. Like, why? If those things are in fact happening, let's make clear that there is, to my knowledge, no data backing that the muscle tissue is actually changing in any way, right? Because to alter muscle tissue, you literally need tons of force. Like, I forget the number, but look it up. It's huge. Do a Google, you'll find it. But perhaps these things are happening by placebo, which is totally possible, or via a neurological response. You have soreness, then you turn up the volume on that pain via the foam rolling, and then you release that pain, and now your soreness seems to be less, right? But the foam rolling didn't change your muscles or speed up your recovery process in any way beyond maybe increasing blood flow, right? Because we do know that foam rolling does increase things like circulation and fluid flow in the body. Anyway, I digress. We need more data to make those claims, and or we need to be careful with the words that we're using when we do make those claims. So if someone is claiming quote-unquote science or evidence-based training methods, take responsibility on your part and ask questions. Ask how it's science-based. What is the science behind their method? Hopefully you can see it within their other content they're providing, whether it's on a blog or social media or email or whatever, wherever you interact with this person. Also, as much as you can, the more science that you read yourself, the more that you'll be able to kind of piece these things together and start to see common trends within the science. Compound movements are efficient for working large amount of muscle groups and have a high metabolic demand. Hip thrusts work your glutes more than squats. You don't have to pull maximal loads to retain strength, and so on. These are all science-based things that you will start to kind of see and form across different studies, across different experts, and things like that. So I am really about clients educating themselves. Obviously, I am here to help with that too. Obviously, this podcast helps with that. But I do want people to be interested in the body and take responsibility for the information that they're taking in and believing. So there's that. Great question. I hope that my answer helped. Moving on to question number two, mobility/accessory work. How do you choose certain movements? Is there a resource for this? So for mobility and accessory work, there are a few things that go into deciding that. I typically go off of three things: the main movement for the day, the goal of that, so whether it's to get strong, build muscle, increase capacity, and the individual, if that is a part of the equation. Okay, so what's the main movement for the day? Like, what do we need to prepare for that movement? The goal of the day. So are we getting strong? Are we building muscle? Are we increasing capacity? And then if it is working with an individual, obviously take into whatever that individual's goals are or limitations are. If individuality is not a part of the equation, then I'll go off of my knowledge and experience with the masses, right? What do most people need? What will most people likely benefit from when it comes to mobility and accessory work? So first off, the main movement of the day, then plug in mobility and accessory work accordingly. Generally speaking, say that you have a squat day. We all know I love squats. Back squat is your main lift for the day. We know back squat is a knee dominant lower body compound movement. I tend towards strength and hypertrophy based training and accessory work for lower body, glutes, hamstrings, quads, probably some core work in there. Make sure there is some single leg work as well. Lunges, Cossack squats, split squats, step ups, all of those work. And you can choose to go either hip or knee dominant with that accessory work as well. It all depends on the goals of the program. If you're going hip dominant and hypertrophy, then you'll likely see, you know, hip thrusts and RDL work, Romanian deadlift work, single leg work, focusing on the posterior chain, and maybe some single leg hip thrusts or deep step ups or pull up machine step downs. If you have never tried pull-up machine step-downs and don't know what I'm talking about, I absolutely love them. Shoot me a DM, look it up on YouTube. try them. You will absolutely love them. If you're wanting a more quad dominant accessory work, then you'd need maybe some high volume goblet squats, elevate the heels perhaps, a narrow stance with elevated heels, or knee dominant Bulgarian split squats or lunges. Anytime, just a little key here, anytime the front foot is closer to the body and we have a more positive shin angle, and the knee drives over that toe, we're going to get more quad work versus glute work out of that. So that's a really simple thing you can do in your training. I forget if I have a podcast on this yet. It might be a blog post, but I go over how to make something more glute dominant or quad dominant just by your foot stance in different exercises. So that's number one, follow the main lift, add appropriate mobility before the workout, and accessory work based on the goals and areas you want to target after the main lift as your accessory work. As far as mobility goes, keeping with the squat example, I'd likely add in some sort of Cossack or adductor rockbacks of some kind, something to get those adductors and hips loosened up. I really also enjoy Bulgarian rockbacks. So Bulgarian split squat, you lower down till your knee touches the floor, rock backwards, which stretches that posterior quad so hard, and then stand up from that position, or ankle or hip mobilization, right? So there's tons of things you can do here. The main point is, if it's individualized, obviously you need to go off of assessments that you've done for that person or yourself, but likely anything for the hips and ankles is going to be great for prepping for squats, because that's likely where people are going to be limited and need to gain awareness and prep for whatever squatting they're going to do. Second, consider the goal of the program and the day, right? This is the sets and reps and tempo. So is the goal to increase work capacity? Is it to build muscle? Is it to gain strength? Is it just to move, right? We don't have a real goal. We're just coming in to get some movement in. That can happen. That will be the driver of the sets and reps and tempo that you use. So your volume and your tempo, likely your intensity as well. So your the weights that you're using, the load, and then also the rest that you're using. But we're going to dive into sets and reps because this could be a training module at this point. So I won't go deep into that here just for the sake of getting all of these questions answered. But know that your sets and reps are going to affect, obviously, the goal that you are trying to get after. So and that's what I'm talking about for accessory work. So number two was all about that accessory work, not necessarily the mobility. So how to choose accessory work, sets and reps are involved in that. Sorry, I feel like I'm rambling. And your sets and reps that you choose for your accessory work is going to be based on whatever the goal of the program is. Like I said, whether you're doing mid and high rep for hypertrophy, whether you're doing endurance, whether you are doing, you know, six reps for strength, that's what I'm talking about. So number three, we kind of already covered all of that, but it is the individual aspect of this, if that is an aspect. So do they want to build a certain muscle group? Are they rehabbing from pain? You know, are we balancing a discrepancy from right to left with strength? That drives the accessory work as well as the mobility that we're going to add either before or after a workout. But for general humans, I go for muscle growth and strength and then balance between planes of movement and unilateral work. So making sure that we are getting some sagittal, some lateral, and some rotational work. Obviously with sagittal coming first, then lateral, then rotational. To recap, that question was how to decide on accessory and mobility work and if there are resources for that. My biggest resource, you guys, is honestly just experience. You know, immerse yourself in this field in different training methodologies and you'll kind of start to form your own philosophy around those things. Question three, for a beginner, do you think it's necessary to do different workouts / rep ranges every week? For the sake of this question, I am assuming a beginner, quote unquote beginner, has never done strength training before or has very little experience with it. So in reality, it doesn't matter how many days because you can do the same volume of total work for the week in 3 days or in 5 days. Now, their body might take better to one of those. For instance, they might find their body responds quicker to a 4-day split program versus a 3-day full body program, even though the programs have the same weekly volume. I hope that that makes sense. For a beginner especially, it's all about consistency, right? Getting their body to recognize certain movements to build those neural pathways for a strong mind-muscle connection in whatever movement we're doing. So I suggest the same weekly workouts for a 4 to 6 week period, whether that is 3 days a week or 4 days a week. There is so much that goes into deciding whether 3 days or 4 days or 5 days is right for someone. And just know that you can spread the same amount of volume over 3 days as 5 days. So don't get so caught up on how many days they're training. Think about total weekly volume. Moving on to question four, how to keep, I will say for question three, with consistency, I'm talking about like, so say they have their workouts Monday through Friday, I want them to repeat those same workouts for 4 to 6 weeks so that we can actually adapt to that training stimulus. Moving on to question four, how to keep programs good for progress, but with enough variety for clients to not get bored? This is a great question. And I think it's good that this coach is thinking about this. So I am team boring, not sexy training, which makes me a bit biased here, I think. And I attract people that aren't necessarily looking for fancy pants, flashy workouts. But you do need to change up a program, right? Because people do get bored with certain things. And sometimes we get into a little rut and we need to just try a new exercise. So you need to change very little in a program to get a client to progress, whether that is a beginner or advanced. I stick by that. For instance, you could only change the weight being used or the tempo or the grip of an exercise, and that may be enough of a new stimulus for the body to be challenged and adapt, right? I would almost argue that I change things more often for the latter reason, so that a client feels challenged in a new way, or doesn't feel bored, but is really working the same muscle group. You know, like I'm only changing it so that they're not bored, but I'm still getting what I want out of that program for them. So sometimes I even give clients options, and I hope that coaches know that they can do this. That's why it's so important to have a comprehensive understanding of the body and movement and what stimulus you're trying to get. So especially with single joint accessory work, you can do any tricep accessory exercise that you want, 3 to 12 reps at a slower down than up tempo. That freedom is huge, and then their accessory work is not going to make or break the desired progress that I want for the program, right? It's a time that they get to bro out, they can chase the pump, they can do whatever accessory work feels best for them, what they feel like doing that way, that day, you know, if they can really, really, really feel their triceps in a cable tricep extension, but they suck at feeling them in a skull crusher, great, I don't care, do the tricep extension, right? So while still being guided by me, they get to have that freedom and decide for themselves. So that is something that you can do. And then I obviously have them record whatever they did choose to do. So know that you have that option as a coach to give your clients, maybe they are feeling a little bored, give them some options if you know for that client that that is going to work for them and not make them feel overwhelmed. So the progression has to be there, but there are ways to make the client feel like they're doing something new while still working the desired area. I really don't change much in programming, but my clients know that. So sometimes I will throw in a little extra core work for fun. It won't do anything, you know, damage-wise. It's safe and they enjoy it. You need to enjoy your training. So just be in communication with your clients and, you know, spice it up if you need to spice it up, but make sure that you are still progressing the bulk of the program how it needs to progress. I hope that that was helpful. Moving on to number five, difference between 3 days a week program versus 5 days or 6 days a week. Are there benefits? So I kind of already answered this one with the newbie programming question. You can get the same volume in both, yes, but with more days, you can hit different body parts multiple times per week from a larger variety and angles and loads. Okay, you can make gains 3 days a week. Yes, I have plenty of Built by Annie and one-on-one clients who do. They train 3 days a week, but you are limited by time. I say that because my people want to be in the gym for under 1 hour, regardless of how many days they are going to the gym, right? So if they are going 3 days, it's going to be 3 hours a week. If they're going 5 days, it's going to be 5 hours a week because that's how much time they want to spend in one sitting at the gym. If you can lift for 2 hours and have the energy and supplements to do so, great. Then you can smash your 5 day per week volume into 3 days. But that's not likely, or not likely for the people that I surround myself with in my following. So with 4 and 5 day per week programs, you get to split upper and lower body up, or just split up your volume in general, which I prefer. 3 days a week equals survival mode for me, I would say. 4 to 5 is my ideal program, and I think what my clients feel the best with and see the most progress with. I think the main benefit of 4 to 5 days is variety and hitting muscle groups and movement patterns more often. So if you want to, that is. There is also the possible metabolic benefit of just moving more often, right? We're giving our body a more consistent stimulus of the same type, depending, of course, on what your life looks like outside of the gym. So maybe you're super active outside of the gym, but if you're sitting most of your day, then I would say that there is a metabolic benefit to moving 4 to 5 days a week with lifting. So the answer is always it depends, but in my opinion, what most of my clients do best with is 4 to 5 days with an upper lower body split. That seems to be the sweet spot as well, because with 4 or 5 days, you have the opportunity to kind of have those more intense days and then have less intense days, which gives that client something to look forward to, you know, or they can move those days around. Like if they just don't have a lot of energy one day, great, do some overhead pressing today versus doing a heavy deadlift pulling day. So I think that is another benefit to having that 4 to 5 days with the variety. The volume is spread out and you can have different intensities for different days for that client. Next, number 6, programming. Conditioning, corrective exercise, mobility, how do you program them in? Corrective exercise and mobility for one-on-one, for me, is based on partially on what most people need, and you know, it won't hurt to do that work, and largely based on mobility assessments through the active life. Those are the assessments that I use for my clients. Corrective exercise and mobility is done before their lift. I would say it's done before their lift, like 90% of the time. Additional mobility after the lift, if applicable, as kind of a cool down. Okay, conditioning is all heart rate for me, I use energy systems development, like I mentioned, Joel Jameson's Ultimate MMA Conditioning, check it out. So from steady state to cardiac power intervals that will make you literally see Jesus and question your life, I use all of that over the board with Built by Annie and my one-on-one clients. So conditioning is only 1 to 2 days a week for Built by Annie, and that's only if it's a 4 to 5 day a week program that is separate from lifting. I do not like mixing the two as far as conditioning and lifting goes if I can help it, and that is going to be done before the lifting if the conditioning is the focus, right? If lifting is the focus and then we are doing conditioning afterwards that is based on the heart rate, great, I'll have them do that still. But if the conditioning is the actual focus, I want them to do that before the lift, right? Because I don't want the lifting to affect their conditioning that they're going to do. So if somebody wants to do cardio on their own, just to increase their caloric deficit, then maybe I advise them to do it after their lift so that the cardio doesn't hinder the strength training session, right? All about priority. So that hopefully answers the conditioning, corrective exercise, and mobility. Depends on the client. I go with generalized. If it's not one-on-one, the mobility and corrective exercise will be done likely before the lift. It will be in, you know, line with whatever the lift is for the day. And then conditioning is going to be done on a separate day if I can, or separate from lifting. So if people can do a daily double, that's what I suggest. Or, you know, you can get into, if you're training heart rate, I just won't even get into that right now. You can totally train heart rate while lifting and go into a conditioning session, but that's a whole another subject. So let's move on to number 7. Got a training cert and now feel like there are so many options, I don't know where to go, help. I'm going to tell you to hit up Mackenzie Kidman and her Pro Coach Academy. and get that experience. You will quickly figure out what you want to do and what direction you want to go by getting experience. Okay, work in different settings. I don't know if you have, you know, gone through college and done internships and things like that. If you have the bandwidth to do internships, I suggest them. But you got to get experience under your belt, right? You have a little bit of knowledge. Now let's stretch that knowledge and use it and see how you like to use it. But I do suggest look up Mackenzie Kidman on Instagram, Pro Coach Academy. What she offers is literally what you're needing. So moving on to number 8. I'm going to read both of these because they're on the same track here. So first one was, what helped you learn how to program? I know there is no magic formula, but I get stuck. I think that's really common. The second one was, what resources should we use to learn how to build a solid lifting program? Taking a program design course in college, training for 4 years during college on my own, trying different methods, doing my internship at University of Portland where my main focus was programming, going through several injuries and the rehab process while in college, that is all what equates to exposure, I guess, in different training and programming methods. I just have a lot of experience. I've always written my own programs. I've been fascinated by it. I love training. And so, you know, when that's the case, you gain a deeper understanding for the method, right? Like when you're immersing yourself in it, when you're talking to your physical therapist and asking them why you're doing what you're doing, when you are learning from other college strength coaches and you're being, you know, exposed to different types of training methodologies, that's really, I didn't read, you know, a magic book or anything like that. If you're talking strength, just strength training, I want you to take these down, get on the World Wide Web and do a Google. I do suggest reading Starting Strength, then research the following: the Juggernaut Method, Jim Wendler's 531 Method, German Volume Training, and Wave Loading. Look them up. Okay, you will get experience. You will start to see different trends between all of those. Yes, they will feel very like powerlifting or bro, but we're talking about strength training here. So I think that getting exposure to all of those are great places to start for strength training. I think that you will gain experience in exercise selection by lifting weights. Okay. I think you need to lift weights or have, you know, knowledge around lifting weights in order to program well. You guys, like I said, there's not a magic programming book because it's so complex. It is a toolbox with limitless tools, right? And the more methods that you try, the larger your toolkit will be. It takes time and it takes experience. And if you don't like this shit, it's not going to be fun for you, straight up. Be a student of programming, and I literally have a 2-part podcast series on how to be good at programming for this reason. If you don't have a basic understanding of human anatomy and physiology, it's going to be very hard, and I honestly doubt that you will ever be quote-unquote good at programming. Straight up. A little tough love there, okay? I hope that those resources help. I will link them in the show notes. Make sure to look those up, do your research, get experience, work under someone if you can, who, you know, you want to work under, right? I think that's why I push college education so much, because it gives you resources and a community to pull from. It gives you internship opportunities and people that your professor knows and your strength coach knows. And so I think that that's why I push for it. Do I think that trainers need a 4-year degree? No. I just think it can be monumentally helpful in learning certain things, and programming is one of those. So if you don't have a 4-year degree, if you don't have resources, find an expert that you want to program like, that you want to learn from, and ask to work under them. Last question, number 9, not like the others, fam, and I like this one. How to overcome having lost gains from not being able to make it to the gym. So this one really comes down to self-worth. I don't say that to be dramatic, but we have to look at how much weight we hold and how much muscle we have or visibly have, right? How much weight do you give to physical results of your training? They're nice. They're a sweet byproduct, but they're not a dictator of our happiness, worthiness, or self-love. Or they shouldn't be. Yes, when I don't lift as often, I get softer, my butt gets flatter, my abs become far less pronounced, my skin folds more on itself, my quads shrink, and I lose my muscular curves. With my experience of traveling the world, I missed lifting weights, not because of the way I looked, right? To other people, I probably didn't look that different. But because I freaking love lifting weights, you guys, I think it's fun. That's why I do it, among other reasons, of course. But still, I personally took that time when we were traveling the world and I wasn't lifting weights as an opportunity to kind of just observe my body and to focus on how awesome it is outside of lifting weights. I found myself being so amazed at like four or five things. One would be how well I actually retained the base of my muscle with the least amount of training I have ever done, right? Since I started training. So since I was like 15 years old, this was easily the longest I had gone with lack of consistency or touching a weight of any kind. And I was, you know, surprised and pleased with how much muscle my body retained. I was surprised by how much my body needs to move, not just lift weights, just in general, our bodies were made to move. And when we don't, I think we really crave that, or I did anyway. How awesome I am without big muscles or a barbell. Like, I really like who I am, not in a, you know, self-obsessed, narcissistic way, but regardless of my body's outward appearance, I enjoy me. I enjoy the way that I was made. I enjoy my mind. I enjoy my creativity. I enjoy what I like to do outside of the gym. And I think sometimes we have to be removed from the gym, removed from our norm to start to see some of those things and kind of get maybe in touch with more of those things. Because especially as a fitness professional, of course, part of my identity does feel like it's in, you know, how much weight I'm able to move or what I look like. And that's just not true. I have a podcast episode on that, but it's easy to feel that way as someone in the fitness industry. So lastly, I was amazed with what my body had been capable of in the past, right? Because yes, I could feel myself getting weaker just in carrying my bags on travel days and whatnot. Instead of being like, gosh, I'm so weak and so skinny, which I totally did feel sometimes, right? I did feel like I was deteriorating sometimes, but I found myself being like, dang, the human body is so cool and adaptable. Like when I do train and lift again, it's so awesome that my body is going to adapt and gain strength and build muscle. It might suck when I start doing that again, but my body is here for me when I'm ready to enter that again, and it's still here for me right now, even if it is not as strong or even if my muscles aren't as pronounced, it is still capable of so much, you guys. So yeah, I don't know if that even answered that question, but I can promise you, if you focus on losing muscle and feeling weak, it will not help your situation. It can suck. I obviously like having muscle. I like being strong. I've talked about how, you know, muscle is my size, so I do tend to deteriorate when I don't lift. My body likes to be small and dainty, but I guess that I recognize my seasons and have realistic expectations of those seasons of life, right? That's a big thing, I think. Know you're going to lose some muscle, and that's okay. It's just a season. Your body is still an amazing vessel, and you're a lot cooler than your muscles, you know? Okay, I think that's all I have. That was a hell of a episode, fam. You guys had some awesome questions. I hope that my answers were helpful. Make sure to check the show notes for resources, because I will make sure that those are in there for you guys. This was a lot of fun for me. I hope that it was fun for you too. Maybe we will do one of these again in the future. Who knows? Either way, thank you for submitting questions if you did. And as usual, if you have not given the show 5 stars, 5 big ones on iTunes and left a written review, please stop what you're doing right now and go do that. That is how we spread the podcast. That's the only way, in fact, or I shouldn't say the only way, but that is the easiest and most prominent way that podcasts can grow and get in front of other people. Can't do it without you, fam. So going for that 100 reviews, I think we, you know, are in the 89 to into the 90s now. So help your girl out if you haven't. Until next time, I am Annie Miller, and thank you so much for tuning into the FitzPro Podcast.